Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. As a change of pace today, we're just going to set microphones in front of our respective computers while we sleep, actually, and record just whatever we talk about when we're otherwise unconscious. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mackin, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Not with us today in the booth is head campfire lass Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod.
Little pig, let me come in.
Not by the hair of my chinny chin chin.
Then I'll huff, and I'll puff, and I'll
spell kids with a Z. Today we're here to talk about episode 67 of Hey Arnold, and for those of you keeping track at home, that is season 4, episode 7, going by production code order. We're going to start with episode 67A, which is called Helga's Parrot. Original air date, April 5th, 1999. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. A sleep-talking Helga confides in Bob's parrot about her love for Arnold. The next day, the parrot flies into Arnold's window, and it is up to Helga to get it. And as we always do on this show, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. Director credit for this episode goes to Frank Weiss, and I saw three writing credits for this episode. They go to Michelle Lamoureux, Joseph Purdy, and Antoinette Stella. So shout-outs all around. Emily, let's kick it to you first. What did you think about Helga's Parrot?
Yeah, I think this episode makes me uncomfortable, but is also pretty funny in some scenes, especially at the very end. And it feels kind of like a continuation of the Halloween episodes we had last week, which were the Headless Cabbie and the other one I'm forgetting. But the Halloween episodes this season. So this kind of keeps it going into spooky season, I think. The line, there's like a pretty suggestive line in it. I've seen online people not knowing how like that line would have gotten past network executives at Nickelodeon. And Harry's going to talk, I think, a little bit more about like the age that this episode and the other episode seem more geared towards, which we talked about in our watch party. Because yeah, these kids are still in fourth grade and they're still, you know, 9 years old, as we just heard Helga tell her mom in Beeper Queen. But this episode is kind of dealing with a little bit more mature, like middle school type themes. We also see Helga like watching Arnold change while she's hiding behind his remote controlled couch in the wall, which is like, oh God. And just like the poem in general that she says and that the parrot recites over and over, it just makes me cringe. Like the cringe is off the charts for me in this episode. But despite that, and I don't want to get too much into it either, but I'll just say what I like that I think is really funny in the episode. I like when Helga's on the phone with Phoebe because she doesn't know how long she's going to be stuck in Arnold's room. And she's just like, Phoebe, I don't know how long I'm going to be here. No one goes to bed around here. And they're all playing whatever games or something. She could just hear Grandma and Grandpa and everyone hanging out downstairs and is eating like the bird food while she, I don't know, hangs out there for the rest of the night. Also just calls back to Helga Blabs et al. And even Stoop Kid, I think, when Arnold hangs out in the mailbox creeping on Stoop Kid. But then the part that I think is the funniest is when after Helga falls onto the kitchen table at Sunset Arms and drags herself into class with the lightning strike at the door, she opens the classroom door and she's clutching this dark umbrella and just slowly dragging herself over to that Komodo dragon. And parrot before that whole thing happens. The whole cycle of life in action that Simmons notes. Because, yeah, there's I guess, like, violence is happening in this one. Violence and some suggestive themes, and makes me uncomfortable, but also makes me laugh. And I want to hear what y'all think.
Yeah, for sure. You were thinking about a lot of the previous Hey Arnold episodes that were also on my mind, I think, which is a good indicator of this embedding itself in certain ways into the show's DNA, which is pretty cool, for good reasons. But yeah, I don't know. Harry, did you feel the same way? What did you think about this episode?
They are wild for this one, huh? This is I love this episode. I've always loved this episode. Watching it in sequence like this, Emily, a lot of what you're saying makes so much sense. This is like really like a PG-13 Hey Arnold episode. I liked it very much personally, but I can totally see how for a show about 9-year-olds, it would make you somewhat uncomfortable. They're definitely sort of like I said, I think I said this in the chat, both of these episodes, actually, this episode and the next episode we're going to talk about, Chocolate Turtles, they feel like they are about 13-year-old characters, right? Like, distinctly, I mean, she even calls Arnold a preteen in her poem, which is like, 9-year-old is not a preteen. So it's almost like this is like Dispatch from season 7 of Arnold when they're all in 7th grade or something, you know? That's how I felt about both of these episodes, but particularly this one, because again, like they're sort of gesturing at Helga's burgeoning sexuality in this episode in a way that previous episodes have not gone into, and that like arguably maybe the show isn't built for, which that's an interesting and good point. Maybe I'm just a big dummy, but like, I wasn't offended because I was maybe just busy having too much fun. I love that in this episode, I think Emily, you called her like Helga Voorhees. I love that she is like literally like a movie villain in this. Like Antoinette Stella or Michelle or whoever pitched this episode must have been like, hey, what if Helga had a nemesis who was a bird and she spent the entire episode trying to kill that bird? And then we introduce a monitor lizard. There's this incredible scene. I don't know. To me, this episode just feels really loose and in sort of a good way. It just feels like the writers are having so much fun. And that really does sort of, to Cody's point, it places it within the DNA of Hey Arnold in the sense that it was like, this is almost like, this is the sort of episode that I definitely don't think that they could do or maybe would have even have wanted to do. In earlier seasons, but that there's something about the energy. There's something about like, we can do things with these characters that we didn't do before. We can be a little bit more risky when it comes to what we're depicting, right? Like at the end of this episode, this is one of my favorite moments in the episode, maybe in the show. My dad brings it up all the time, where the monitor lizard eats the parrot right before he's about to tell Helga's secret. And then Helga, looking completely haggard, completely like messed up, she pets the monitor lizard and she says, I think you and I are going to get along just fine. And that's after the sensitive soul Simmons has literally passed out. I find it so funny. I kind of love this characterization of Helga, to be honest. I kind of love the idea that what they're doing with this episode is talking about how women having crushes, like girls growing up, it's not like all cute. It's like Helga is not a cute person, right? And so like what it looks like when she's in love or when she has a crush is not cute, but that doesn't mean it's not valid. And I guess Helga Blabs It All is like maybe an even better version of this episode. I think that the criticism I have for this episode is they even take the best joke from Helga Blabs It All, where Helga just like falls out of her hiding place and reveals herself to everyone and then just sort of angrily storms off and nobody says anything. That joke is stolen wholesale from a very from Helga Blabs It All and put into this episode. And that's very disappointing, I guess, because it's like, that was my favorite joke in Helga Blabs It All. Like it's an absolute showstopper, but like maybe they didn't think everybody would just remember that they were retreading it. So I guess like if there is a criticism maybe of this episode in general and maybe of the season thus far in general, is that like it comes perilously close to retreading its steps, right? Like both this episode and the episode we'll talk about next, they use structures that they've used before. Not that Hey Arnold has ever shied away from sort of having templates, But I think they have shied away from being so clear in their almost like homages to previous templates. And so your mileage may vary with that. I think in this case, being a little bit more like unbound, I guess you could say, off the chain in this episode really works for me. But I can both understand, like, I'm very sympathetic to Emily's argument, and I think it's a good one, that like this doesn't feel a lot like the sort of thing that Hey Arnold necessarily was built to tackle. And it might be sort of like a, I don't know, like to me, this almost reads as a like a manifestation of frustrations with the limitations of the form, right? It's like maybe Antoinette Stella and company wanted to write an episode about 13-year-old Helga. Maybe they were kind of tired of 9-year-old Helga. That's what this episode suggests to me, which is both kind of a shame and a really interesting opportunity, I guess. So like, I think I come down very favorably on this episode, but I totally understand why it makes people uncomfortable. And honestly, yeah, like I think some of the lines are kind of very risque for what we're talking about here. It's very wild. They're wild for this one, I guess, is how I feel about it.
Yeah, now that the dust has settled, you know, our watch party is over, you know, I can look back and kind of what you two have been talking about and I guess, you know, throwing my own sort of sensibilities into the ring. Like, I definitely, you know, I was just thinking about Little Pink Book the whole time, just the idea of Helga losing something, some sort of like representational token of her feelings for Arnold. And she has to sort of like go behind enemy lines. Like, this feels just, I couldn't stop thinking about that, the beats of that episode in comparison to this one. And like that sort of, you know, talking about templates, thinking about that template a lot and thinking about, you know, it's nice to see a little bit of Himbo Arnold back in the action. Sort of, you know, oh, going to the pet store is like, oh, hey, Helga, you're here to buy a pet? Like,
he's so dumb, idiot. Dude. Oh my God. Yeah.
Arnold is, yeah, he's our himbo and he's great. So like feeling splashes of that as a sort of throwback was really nice. And I wouldn't call them tonal misfires necessarily. It's more like sporadic with the sort of like tonal frequencies that this episode is going for. Things playing into slapstick isn't necessarily correct, but there are some like very slapsticky jokes. Harry used the word risque. I think that's probably fair to throw in here as well. But, and like some of the images that this episode brought forth, the Helga Voorhees, the just her stalking through her house holding a mini chainsaw, and then her like haggardly limping into her classroom using an umbrella as a cane, lightning strikes and flashes, falling through the ceiling and causing substantial structural damage to the boarding house, which, as you said, was done in a previous episode. The final sort of beat of the episode with the monitor lizard eating the bird, the sort of violence, Emily, that you were talking about, the like, you know, pulling Lila's hair, flicking Arnold's ear, and like shoving Lila. It's not mean-spirited is like a term I'll throw out there, and not like to the extent of like, you know, I'm watching a John Cassavetes movie or something. We need some cinema references on this episode, but just like jokes that lean more into that. I mean, how many episodes before this like have the climactic, you know, leaning fall on the death of a pet? Like, that's
one notable example, I think, but you're right.
Right. I wouldn't cast that necessarily over this entire episode, but there are enough notable splashes of it to make it feel like this feels, for better and for worse, unlike a lot of the sort of Hey Arnold sensibilities that we've come to know and experience and love up through, you know, 3+ seasons. On the whole, I enjoyed my time with this episode. Some of the specific moments were, a little off-putting Helga explores, you know, the depths of her soul and communicates, you know, different flavors of desires for Arnold that, you know, again, the show maybe hasn't seen in its script writing up to this point. And then there are also some very physical gags that, aside, like, separate from that, are very funny. So, yeah, I don't know. I probably don't need to love all components of this episode. There's, I think, enough room for that. But this is, if anything, a nice experiment for, I don't know, maybe we'll see some of these sensibilities later, these sort of darker, edgier sensibilities play into, additional season 4 and 5 episodes. Who's to say us in the future, I guess, is the answer to that.
Yeah, you were reminding me too that there's the whole sequence where Lila's in Arnold's room, just on his couch, like just the two of them alone, even though they're still in fourth grade. So yeah, I think to Harry's point, this is like, it's not like anything is happening that's not, everything is still characteristic of the characters here. It's just like everything's aged up for pretty much all of them across the board. Maybe not Simmons in the classroom, maybe not the dragon. But and the parrot, but otherwise everyone else, Arnold, Lila, Helga, Phoebe a bit, I don't know, the kids in the class, like the way they're handling all of this and just the way they're hanging out is all more suggestive of middle schoolers on dates or thinking through more risque poetry and all of that. And I was thinking too about how one of our last guests, Allegra Frank, was mentioning the Pataki's show, which didn't end up happening. That had been mentioned in the past. Craig had mentioned it too, but it just seems like maybe this was that their attempt to kind of like fall into that realm of like more of a teen Nick show. Just aging up everyone. And so it feels uncomfortable to me because I'm like, oh, but they're still in fourth grade. But yet, I don't know, maybe the writers just wanted to see what the characters would do in that realm, in that age group.
I also love how heightened everything feels, right? Like this really does feel like an episode that gets real. I love that like Lila and Arnold have this weird tension because it feels like something that like you can tell the writers wanted to address and they had to wait for an episode like this to kind of do it, right? But like I love how like they get on each other's nerves, right? Because Helga's between them and she's secretly pulling it Lila's hair and tweaking Arnold's ear, but like Lila straight up says, like, don't pull my hair. I know you like me, but that's not appropriate. And it's like, oh my God, like she said it. She went there. You know, I feel like this episode goes there in a lot of ways, right? And I think that like it's a really good match for the comedic stylings of this episode because the premise is ridiculous, right? Like on it, like think about it, right? Like this is an episode where Big Bob brought home a parrot because he wanted the parrot to like star in a beeper commercial. And then being Big Bob, he gets tired of the parrot because it bothers him. And he just picks it up and brings it into Helga's room because of course that's what he would do to dispose of things he doesn't want, right? Just pass him off on. He literally says, maybe I'll put it in the girl's room. It's very characteristic of all of these characters. To your point, Emily, it's right in there with them. It's just heightened in this sort of like absurd, like comedy of errors way. But I really love that from a plot construction perspective because I love thinking through ways we can use these absurd cartoon characters to create absurd cartoon situations, I guess, right? And especially like within the realm of a comedic episode like this one, I think it really works for me as like a just an absurdist Arnold episode, right? Like this is one that really sort of like, and we've had some of those before, right? Like I would say that the tone of Arnold, Hey Arnold, vacillates. And there are episodes that are on the more madcap sort of comedic side. And there are episodes, you know, like The Journal that become deadly serious. And I really like that this is a show that has the capacity to do both of those things. And I think it really works for me here, too. Like, I think that they're like some of the funniest stuff in this episode is some of the funniest in the series, in my opinion. Like, I think that like one of the most iconic Phoebe Helga moments is Helga alone at Arnold's apartment eating birdseed because she's so hungry. And she's talking to Phoebe, whom she has passed the monitor lizard off on. And she says through her cell phone, she's like, no, Phoebe, of course I don't know what monitor lizards eat. And it's like, Phoebe is like, poor long-suffering Phoebe is like, just trying to like, do this absurd thing that her friend has asked of her. And Helga won't even sort of like, acknowledge the absurdity of the situation. It's sort of a perfect microcosm of their relationship. And I guess I really love this episode for doing things like that.
Yeah, I think unsung or like unmentioned as of yet variable playing into the sort of the heightened state that this episode lives in. And honestly, like the sort of like aging up of the characters and the sort of different flavors of emotions playing into these scenarios. This episode, I feel like, is paced in a more of a manic way than we're used to up to this point. There's a lot, like it covers a lot of ground. Compare that to some of the other episodes where, you know, what do I sound like?
This is very efficiently done, this episode. Think about how this episode was constructed. Moneyball 2011, or, you know, something like that.
But this is very, like, we don't stay in a single place for, I feel like, very, like, other than Arnold's bedroom, him and Lila, you know, that maybe goes a minute or two, but, like, we have to establish Bob getting the bird. I mean, even before that, there's, you know, Helga is feeling distraught. She has this line that's like, you know, what else can go, Arnold and Lila, oh, what else can go wrong? Smash cut to Barrett and Bob. They're like, oh, I know exactly what I'm in for. And then it's just establishing the bird. Bob doesn't like the bird, puts it in Helga's room. Helga has a moment of inspiration, and then she realizes the bird hears it. The bird doesn't escape right away. We have some time where the bird is still lingering at the Pataki household. Then the bird escapes, and then she goes to Arnold's room, and we have to squeeze in that monitor lizard. We need to squeeze in, you know, a C plot for that, where the monitor lizard is purchased at the pet store and then pawned off on Phoebe. And I think part of the, not that this episode is necessarily trying to get away with anything, but you can gloss over some more of, you know, one-off jokes or moments or exchanges if you are moving at a quick enough pace in the show. We're sort of used to them. We let certain sequences digest a little bit longer. Certain conversations take, you know, a couple minutes at a time instead of, you know, 15 to 30 seconds at a time. Than anything else, throwing that out to help me rationalize my own feelings for this episode. But I probably shouldn't go unspoken that this episode moves very quickly and, you know, again, for better and for worse, maybe plays into our perception of some of the more like heightened, mature nature of the things that we're seeing. And I don't know, allowing ourselves the proper amount of time to like digest those things, right?
Man, that's such a good point, Cody. I really liked Emily's point, too, about the Patakis. Like, the Patakis probably would have been a very humorless sort of dour show, kind of like Daria. So I don't know that this episode would actually be Patakis, but it does kind of feel like a backdoor pilot for another kind of show, right? It's like, I love that by season four, we have established that, like, Helga, through her like inability to speak her truth and to come forward with who she really is now living in some kind of hell of her own design. You know what I mean? And it's like the parrot in this episode is like a demon, right? Like it mocks her openly for her inability to tell the truth and then flies directly to Arnold's house for no reason other than it's, again, demonic powers that are animating it that are trying to get Helga to reveal her secret. Like, I love, Cody, it's so good that you pointed this out. Like, even before the parrot enters the picture, this is an episode about a very bad, no good day for Helga, right? A day where, like, everything goes wrong and everything is against her. And I really love the idea that just sort of, like, as an absurd premise, it's like, this is a story about a girl who is lying to herself so hard that the universe itself has begun conspiring to get her to tell the truth, right? It's like she's fighting with nature itself to try to keep her secret from Arnold at this point. And it's fun to see her go to those absurd lengths. I mean, it's an episode where Helga, wearing safety goggles and a hard hat, tries to use a chainsaw to murder a parrot in the first 5 minutes of this episode. And, you know, I just gotta love it for that.
Hey, you know what? Helga was right. Nothing good ever came from letting a parrot live, right? Just, I don't know. I don't know anybody with a parrot. I'm sure they're fine. Talking birds populate my TikTok feed in good, fun ways. So shout out to the bird owners out there. That's my one shout out for this episode. Any other shout outs or lingering points that y'all would like to float out there before we close this one out?
yeah, not a shout out, but shade at the parrot's voice. Because, oh my God, of course Helga wants to get rid of him. He's so annoying. You can't stand to hear him. Even though he's repeating the poem that's like kind of funny and also kind of weird, you're like, oh my God, if you say Brock, tell the world one more time. I swear to God.
Shout outs to how funny and completely character appropriate everybody is, but especially Arnold forming like a soulmate level connection with this parrot immediately is so funny because, like, one, of course Arnold would do that, right? Of course he would be like, this is my parrot. Like, it was like he was sad and he was running away from home and I rescued him and now we're best friends forever. And also, like, of course he would do that because that's the worst possible scenario for Helga. So I just, like, I love how everything compounds in this episode. And shout outs to the monitor lizard. Monitor lizard is such a weirdly specific pet. And there are so many good jokes about it. Like, the woman at the pet store is like, don't try to talk her out of this kid. This monitor lizard's been here so long, I'm teaching it how to read. And it's like, why were they trying to sell a monitor lizard? Why did the writers decide that a monitor lizard specifically was going to be the pet for this episode rather than anything else? It's just like, I want to know everything about this. I just love that. I think that's such a funny joke, and it really speaks to how off the wall and zany the comedy of this episode is.
Do we know if it's a Komodo dragon too? Or is it, I mean, is it a square rectangle thing?
Yeah, mountain lion, puma, cougar scenario where like monitor lizard and Komodo dragon are the same thing?
I have
no idea.
It's
Komodo, excuse me.
No, they're different. These are different things. A monitor lizard is its own thing. Let's see. In the case of Komodo dragon. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Okay, it looks like it might be in the same family, Emily. So you might be right. I think that they're smaller.
Yeah, I'm saying a member of the monitor lizard family is a Komodo dragon.
Yes.
So this could be a Komodo dragon, but they only call it a monitor lizard.
Right. Komodo dragons get up to 7 feet long, whereas I think that monitor lizards only get up to 3 meters. 7 meters, 23 feet versus monitor lizards, 3 meters, 10 feet. So it's like a mini Komodo dragon.
Still 10 feet. Woof.
Dude.
The moment at the very, very end of the episode when Helga gives her Casablanca is like, I think you and this is the start of a beautiful friendship, monitor lizard, and she like scratches its chin and it's like, oh yeah, that's the spot. Makes it all worth it.
Another amazing cinema reference, Cody. You did it.
Yeah, well, hey, on top of that, all this talk about Helga Voorhees makes me want to add Friday the 13th to my Halloween watch list, so I'm going to take a moment, do that before I forget. In the meantime, do not touch that dial, because we will be right back after the break. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We've got episode 67B to get into next, and that episode is called Chocolate Turtles. Original air date, April 5th, 1999. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Crisis strikes when Gerald's little sister Timberly eats a stock of chocolate turtles that he and Arnold are supposed to sell for a local scout organization. And once again, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible, Christine Kolosov directed this one, and writing credit for this episode, one Craig Bartlett. Show author, show creator, showman extraordinaire. So shout outs all around. Harry, we'll kick it to you first this time. What did you think about this episode B, Chocolate Turtles?
Thanks, Cody. Man, the fact that it's a Craig joint is so interesting to me. Especially coming hot off the heels of the first, the A episode. I wonder if he was like, oh, if you're going to write an episode about 13-year-old Helga and Arnold, I'm going to write an episode about 13-year-old Arnold and Gerald. Because this episode also feels weirdly like more mature. Not just in terms of like how they're acting. Like, first of all, Arnold is like mortified about the idea of joining the Campfire Lasses because he thinks it's going to make him uncool, which like is not really something I've seen Arnold worry about ever before on this show. It is very funny, and I like that. And Gerald is in great character here, right? Like, again, this is well established that Gerald is always looking for a get-rich-quick scheme with the wacko watches, now with the campfire last cookies. Timberly is always messing things up in hilarious ways. This is a weird episode, in my opinion. I think that, like, it wasn't really criticism when you said it about the last episode, Cody, but I think that this episode maybe is just trying to do too many things at once. It has maybe a few too many acts, because first we have the whole breakdown of Gerald and Arnold selling the campfire cookies and are the turtles, and Arnold's not really okay with it, but whatever, he thinks the plan might be a little cockamamie. Then there's the reveal that they have to join the campfire lads. Then Timberly eats the cookies. Then they have to make the cookies. Then making the cookies goes wrong. Then they, like, take Timberly door to door and capitalize upon her inherent cuteness to win the money back. And we're left with, like, 30 seconds at the end of the episode for the moral of the story, right? And it's just like, the moral is just Arnold telling the truth about what they were doing and why, the campfire lass just taking the money, and then they walk off into the sunset. And I was left feeling a little bit like, what just happened? What did we learn here? You know, it's like, first of all, they didn't really learn not to essentially, and I'm sorry, excuse me, but pimp out Timberly and her cuteness for money, which is the thing that happens near the end of this episode. And like, that was the thing that I was like more sort of scandalized by than anything in these episodes, is the fact that they kept getting away with it. And it's hilarious, to be fair, right? Like, Gerald literally goes into a dumpster and finds like rags that he can put on Timberly to make her look like Oliver Twist so that they can get more out of the story. But I was waiting for some big comeuppance. Like, frankly, I 100% thought that this episode was going to end with Arnold and Gerald's nightmare coming true, and they would have to dance as the campfire lasses for everyone to sort of like earn back the money that they had spent and weren't able to earn back. That would have been super funny. I would have loved that as sort of a karmic comeuppance. Instead, the boys are just sort of like, well, that was a wild adventure, and I never want to hear the word turtles or campfire lass again. And I mean, it's good. It's funny, and I really love that episodes don't always have to be super moralistic. I kind of think it's funny to, again, backdoor pilot this. What if this show is just about Gerald and Arnold being two sort of doofy, dumb boys who are getting into trouble constantly because of their antics, right? They're like Beavis and Butthead in this episode. And I, to be honest, like, it's not a flavor I was expecting to get from Arnold, but I didn't hate it. So, and Timberly is very good in this episode, and I love a sibling episode. So yeah, I don't know. I don't really know that this episode is the most sort of like thematically or tonally cohesive with itself or with the themes of the show or of the season, but I had fun watching it, and I think that that's more than good enough for an episode like this. But I'm really interested to hear what you guys have to say.
Yeah, definitely. I think ultimately I land a little bit more positively on the lack of thematic cohesiveness. Just the more I sit with this episode, I can talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. But first, I want to hear what Emily thinks about this episode. Emily, how did you feel about these chocolate turts?
Yeah, in general, I love chocolate turtles. You know, my grandpa makes really good ones. I'm sure they'd be better than the salt infused Timberly ones in this episode. But this episode, chocolate turtles, I think is fine. I think it's all right. It's kind of silly. I like that we see Gerald and Arnold just hanging out on Gerald's couch watching this like fun cop show. That's Pop Daddy, and you have Gerald singing along to it. And me and Harry were thinking it was Lou Rawls, who plays Harvey the Mailman. Yeah, that's okay. Who is Pop Daddy? And then I really like too at the beginning when Arnold, it zooms into his eye, and he goes through like the terror of what it would be like to be on stage as a campfire lass with Gerald wearing the full kilts and everything. What's goofy about that, too, is Arnold already basically is wearing a kilt, as has been pointed out by
Rhonda. Oh, this is such a good point. Oh my God.
He's got the red flannel under his green sweater and it looks like a kilt, you know, and if you're none the wiser, Arnold is wearing a dress half the or skirt half the time, or is maybe of Scottish descent, or who knows? He lives in a boarding house. Who knows? But so that he has this moment of terror, like, oh my God, I can't imagine what it would be like if people saw me wearing a kilt with the campfire lasses. I don't know, kind of funny. Maybe that's just the play on the irony of all of that. I do like that animated moment, though, zooming into his eyeball. Also, Timberley's great, and I think it's funny that when they're watching Pop Daddy and so engrossed by Lou Rawls' hit cop character, that Gerald's just like, yeah, yeah, sure, sure, Timberley, whatever you say. And then, like, a beat later, just like, but, like, make sure you don't eat those turtles. And it's like, okay, that's what she literally just asked you, and you said, yeah, yeah, sure, sure. So that's funny. I also think, since this is a Craig joint, Craig might just, like, shouting out Stoop Kid every once in a while, because I was thinking about how he threw him into the cool party episode, too. And it's nice. It's just, we obviously love to see Stoop Kid, so. Hello, Stoop Kid. Good to see you. Nice to see you crying over Timberley's cute, heartbreaking story. Even Oscar starts crying at the end there when, as Harry noted, they dress up the little sister in rags to beg for money. That is that's a hard part to watch, but also funny. Yeah, I don't know. This kind of goes all over the place. Also, this box of chocolate turtles, it costs $10, I believe. It's like $20 for two boxes. What are these prices in 1999 that you're spending $10 on a box of chocolate turtles from, like, essentially what it is, essentially Girl Scout cookies, right? Which are still to this day like $5 basically. So I don't know what's going on in 99. Also, just wanted to mention that the Johansson kitchen is getting absolutely destroyed this season. Between this chocolate turtle fiasco and Jamie O being in love, you know, making all sorts of souffles and just running a mess all over their parents' kitchen. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of wacky and all over the place. I'm not like crazy about it. I'm not in love with the episode, but I think it's kind of fun. And we don't usually get to see that many episodes with Timberley, and just the sibling thing is a little more rare. So kind of nice to have that change of pace.
Yeah, definitely, definitely a change of pace, for sure. Also, you know, I didn't even register the price of the turtle boxes. That is an important consideration, because I've got an inflation calculator up here. That's like $8,000 in today's money, from 1999 to now. So
the minute that Emily said that, I was looking forward to this bit. Thank you so much for not letting me down.
Yeah, for folks at home, it's the bit where I know to a T just exactly how much the inflation will carry forth to, right, to $2022.
The human calculator, course. That's what we call him.
Yeah, I'm that Batman villain.
Every podcast needs a math wizard, and that's Cody for us.
That's the platform that I've been running from the background. Thank you, Emily, for making it canonical. And, hey, other podcasts, take note. You need a human cut. You need a math whiz. And that's that. Yeah, this episode though, I like Harry. I like a good sibling episode. Timberley is very funny. And I do kind of like the show recognizing that, hey, we did already have an episode all about like the trials of being siblings, or being an older brother, having a younger sister. And you see it multiple times in this episode. Instead of making the whole episode about like making it up to the younger sibling, it's just Timberley starts crying, and then you can see Gerald and Arnold's faces like kind of do the math for us, you know, on screen, and just like, okay, like we've got bigger fish to fry narratively. Let's just get past this. They feel bad. Timberley feels bad. Now we can move on from there. So that's, I don't know, it may be shorthand, but I think efficient and effective, which I mocked myself saying last episode, but this time it makes sense, is what I'm telling myself. But yeah, the thing that I felt this episode doing, and maybe it is because I knew Craig was the writer before jumping in, and I was sort of looking for something, it felt like we were playing into this sort of meta of, I guess, like to lead up to it, you know, Gerald has this scheme that he and Arnold, or that he ropes Arnold into. It's like, hey, we're going to sell some cookies. I got the member price. We're going to get out of, you know, our end of the bargain, and then we'll make money out of it. And, you know, you think, oh, like I kind of forgot what the middle of this episode was. So I was like, oh, is this like a cooking episode? And so the middle act is them making these cookies, and then you have more like a sibling dialogue and interplay. And I mean, like, this episode is them just running out of time. Right? Like they're running out of time. Like the clocks run out. It's like, there's nothing else we can do except do the season 4 thing that a lot of episodes have had our characters do. And just like, we just got to own up to it. We just got to come clean and like accept the consequences. There's a very, as it's been said, a very hollow, moral conclusion. It's, you know, everybody feels a little weird and like bummed about what happened. You know, the Johansson kids had a little bit of a fallout. They're building that back up. They don't get the money. Campfire Lass doesn't break their kneecaps, but does take their share of the money because she and the rest of the Campfire Lasses were duped by this scheme. And, you know, I as someone who, like, I mean, speaking for myself, it's tough for me to sometimes get on board with like a lack of interior sort of rationale for why things are happening. There's no real reason why this was an episode where like the clock just ran out and we just kind of got to, I probably wasn't a matter of them like, hey, we got to turn in the screenplay because we have nothing else. This is just how the episode's going to end. But the characters are certainly turning in a half-baked product of their efforts, literally a half-baked, well, a fully baked, but just, you know, with the wrong ingredients. And this episode was that. I don't know if it's it being the day it is or however it hit me, but that just really struck me in a good way this evening. I really felt myself getting on board with the nonsensical nature of this episode. The I don't know, not everything made sense, and for some reason that really made sense to me this time.
Yeah, I really like that. I especially like coming off the heels of, again, episode A, like, I love how absurdly magnified everything is, right? Like, and I think that this episode maybe works best, intended or not, as sort of one of those siblings, like, love them or hate them, gotta have them sort of episodes, right? Which is definitely how Kimberly and Gerald's relationship has been characterized in the past, as sort of like, yeah, they get at each other's throats, but they love each other and they can't be without each other, right? Or like, they would never do without each other. I love that both Kimberly's sort of like inconveniences and her powers in this episode are magnified to similarly demonic levels as the parrot, right? From the first episode. It's like Kimberly eats 40 boxes of turtles in apparently the span of a single episode of television. I can't remember how long Shaft episodes are, but we're talking either a half hour or an hour. And her only justification is, I was hungry. And she says it exactly like Harold would say it. So shout outs to a queen.
Yeah, go ahead. What happened to these? What happened to these turtles? Oh, I don't know.
I don't feel. Yeah, she's. Yeah, she says, oh, I don't know. I guess they're gone. Yeah, it's so good. And then, like, also putting salt into the cookie batter for no other reason than, quote, I just wanted to help. It's like, what are you talking about? Why would you think that adding a secret ingredient would be helping? But then she also has this preternatural cuteness ability where, like, you could see Craig having so much fun writing that montage, right? First she makes Stoop Kid cry. Then she makes the Jolly Ollie Man cry. Then she makes Oscar cough up money, right? It's like, what kind of a superhuman do you have to be to get Oscar to give you money? It's unfathomable, right? So, like, I really love it from that perspective. I think it's so funny that, like, this doesn't immediately register as a sibling episode, right? Because Kimberly doesn't even come in until she's just the problem to be confronted. It's like a third of the way, or not quite a third, but like a sixth of the way through this episode, it happens. And there's so much else going on that it doesn't even really register as a sibling episode so much as an episode about Gerald and Arnold, an episode about siblings, an episode about the neighborhood, all of these things, right? And I guess I really like it for that reason too. I just love that, like, the message is a little bit underbaked just because underbaked, huh? Just because there are so many things going on simultaneously in this episode. And I also really love that, like, again, I brought it up before, but the, like, Bill and Ted misadventures of Arnold and Gerald in this episode, where it's like, first of all, like, Gerald's initial scheme is extremely cockamamie and it relies on deception. It's like, oh yeah, we're going to get the Girl Scouts to wholesale us these turtles so that we can sell them back at a profit. And that's how we're going to make enough money to buy a go-kart. And then Arnold, like, this is overlooked, but rational Arnold, his scheme to like make up for the fact that the turtles are gone is to somehow bake 40 boxes of turtles in the span of a single afternoon, which also, like, great point about the Johansson kitchen, Emily, but I have to say, I think that Mrs. Johansson may be putting this on herself, the fact that she stocks her kitchen with the supplies to apparently make 40 boxes of turtles in the span of a single afternoon. I mean, we are talking about, like, that's like a factory level of chocolate that had to be produced in this single afternoon. But yeah, I guess I just really love that, like, this along with episode A, it feels like we've gotten loose enough to where, like, the internal logic of the episode need not hold up a very funny joke, right? In the way that maybe it needed to early on. And I think it works, right? Like, I think that this episode captures an energy and a spirit that, while not really feeling Hey Arnold exactly, is a lot of fun, especially for, like, sort of a quick-paced cartoon like this one.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe and solid place to land. You know, there doesn't need to be a definitive, like, morally understandable conclusion, especially when every facet of the episode, every character is sort of committed to that. I mean, Arnold up and says, I don't think I, like, called this out specifically before, but like, there's that line in the last couple minutes where Arnold goes, he sighs and he goes, oh, like, I don't know, why fight it? It's working. Just the title character who is always so intent on, like, hey, everybody, you gotta do the right thing. We gotta do this. We gotta do that. It's like, well, you know, there's a minute and a half left in the episode and this is working. So, like, and like, I don't feel good about it, but let's do it.
And he for maybe the most morally questionable thing we've ever seen these two do, honestly, like, it's seen as funny, but, like, they are straight up manipulating all of their neighbors using their younger sister against her own, like, kind of against her will, right?
Yeah, yeah. And at the very least, I mean, the solace we take from this is that, like, Timberly, point to her character, like, she does feel genuinely bad about it. Like, all the emotions that she feels, like, Gerald and Arnold and all the other, you know, older characters, there are distinct nuances and, like, layers to the schemes that they might be pulling off, or the feelings that they might be feeling just by nature of them. Being more, you know, emotionally experienced, you know, 8 or 9 year olds or whatever. But, like, Timberly as a kid, I like the show's depict, like, she wears her emotions on her sleeve, and, like, yeah, she does. She feels, I don't know. At least it seemed to me that she was feeling legitimately bad. And obviously Gerald and Arnold are they're miles away from feeling remorseful about any of these things, because they're trying to get out of wearing kilts, or
they're
one of them is trying to get out of wearing a kilt. They are
in
knuckleheads.
This episode, I love that.
This is an episode about knuckleheads, truly. Those are my thoughts about knuckleheads. I don't know, did you all have anything else you wanted to cover about this one? Lingering threads, shout outs.
I mean, my big shout out that Emily already said was hearing Lou Rawls get to do his impression of Shaft would have been absolutely worth this entire episode, even if this episode was far worse. So huge shout outs to Craig Bartlett for making that happen. And then, you know, Jim Lang obviously used the theme song as the outro music in this episode, because of course you would. But man, if you've got Lou Rawls, like, this is absolutely how you've got to utilize him. So I'm so glad that they did. And just shout outs to, I think that a point that Emily made that I really liked about the last episode is, even though the tone of the show didn't totally match up with Hey Arnold, the tone of the characters was spot on. I feel that with the one sort of almost like subversive example of Arnold, That is true. And I think that the reason why Arnold reacts out of character in this episode is honestly just part of the joke at that point, right? It's like, Arnold is even the guy who's like, okay, I'm just going to let this go. And we're all thinking like, wait, what? And, you know, that's good. So yeah, I think another episode where if the sort of like tone is not what we expected, at least it is firing on all cylinders and very confident and realized, I think.
My one shout out goes to Timberly's chocolate mustache after she eats all of the original Campfire Lass chocolate turtles, the 40 boxes of original turtles. That's all I got.
Nice. I guess one thing, I can't remember if we've addressed this on previous episodes or not, but maybe not, because we've only, the show Hey Arnold has only talked about Campfire Lasses in passing before. It's never been at the forefront, but have y'all ever been in the Scouts? I guess I was in Cub Scouts through elementary school. So through fifth grade, like I did like the, you know, trajectory of like, whatever it was, like Tiger Cub, and there was what, like a bobcat in there, probably like a bear or something. Weeblos was the last one. My dad and I made great Pinewood Derby cars. We always cleaned up at that competition. So that is point for the athletes. But yeah, and then I dropped it because I wanted to do other things with my life. But yeah, I don't know. Do y'all have mileage in Scouts or not so much?
Yeah, I started as a Weeblo, started late. Made a bunch of merit badges up. I don't actually remember doing a lot of the work that was required for those merit badges, but they gave them to me. So I defrauded the Boy Scouts of America.
Nice. By means of also selling popcorn, right, at a half price and make it, because that's,
yes.
Cause and then, Cub Scouts sold the popcorn.
Right. And then I made my own, but I put sugar in it, but luckily that was kettle corn, so it all worked out. Also participated a single time in the Pinewood Derby. My car was called the Shimmering Torpedo. I was very insistent upon that name as like a 10-year-old boy or whatever. I thought it was very cool. It was silver and gold, and I thought that when it was in motion, it looked like it was shimmering. So there you go. Semi-finalist, knocked out in the final race. The winner, my friend Dave, shout-outs to Dave. He had... And this is really aging myself at this point, but he had put a pilot into his Pinewood Derby, and it was a Darth Maul action figure because Darth Maul was all the rage. My suspicion, and my father's suspicion to this day, is that Darth Maul did weigh down this car above the legal limit, and so it was able to gain downhill speed faster than it should have been able to. So even though the Shimmering Torpedo was the superior design, Dave had cheated and used Darth Maul and the powers of the Sith to oust victory from me. So I've never forgiven or forgotten. And Dave, if you're out there somewhere, we're going to have another playoff here anytime. Just name the spot.
Dave, come on the pod, I guess. I was never a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout, but I was, and still to this day am, a Campfire Lass. And I also want to say shout out to the Campfire Lasses, because they were welcoming Arnold and Gerald with open arms and were calling them Campfire Lads, and it was all good. It like didn't matter the gender for their troop, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you're right. They really get a... bad reputation on this on this show, right? It feels like every time the Campfire Lasses are showing up, they're like an inconvenience or something hateful that the rest of the characters don't like. But hey, Gerald did also say that the Campfire Lasses were going to break their thumbs at one point. So maybe there's a lot about the Campfire Lasses we don't know. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, stay tuned for the season 5 episode about the Campfire Lass Mafia, where kneecaps and thumbs will be broken.
It turns out that Big Gino runs the Campfire Lasses through a subsidiary, right? That's what's going to end up happening.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, stay tuned for that. But hey, in the meantime, thank you, dear listener, for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod, and that's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narvison, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I've been Emily Sue. You can find me at Campfire Lass.
That's right. And hey, thank you again for listening. And you know what? Please keep listening. Keep listening. We'll keep churning out content, putting out episodes. We'll not let you down. We'll be right back.